Hi Maria. Hi Simone.
Morning.
Good morning. Hi Amy. Amy, I've been meaning to send you a note. I finally started diving into your book. It's so
Oh, thank
good.
you. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, no, thank you for sending it. It's such
Yeah.
a, and it's, I'm actually glad that I waited because now that I know you a little bit better, it's like, I think it's even, it's making me even happier to read through it.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. I don't know how many of you give any credence to astrology and Mercury retrogrades, but I'm feeling it big time this week, and just seeing a lot of plans fall apart and come together and rescheduling and all of that. So I'm hoping that as many of us as possible will be here this week, but I would not be surprised if there are a couple fewer of us than usual today. All right. So today we're gonna, in a few minutes, we're gonna dive into strategizing. And strategizing skills. Kind of like the, I really see visioning, energetics of new things, and strategizing on a, they really go together. They're kind of on a continuum. First, we want a vision with clients. We want to take into consideration everything we looked at in our last session, all the niggly pieces that are going to come up around new things. And then we're going to want to support the client to strategize towards that vision. So, in a little bit, we're going to get to those strategizing skills. But before we get there, a couple of things. First of all, take a moment and write down for yourself what's something that you're celebrating. As you've heard me say many times already, we're so good at consistently acknowledging everything that doesn't go well. We're on top of that, right? We know all the things that aren't going well, but usually not so on top of really acknowledging and noticing and honoring the things that are going well. So, what is it that you would like to celebrate today? Could be outer, could be inner, could be something huge. Small steps are celebrations too, and sometimes small steps are huge celebrations. Whatever it is for you, whatever that thing is that, or things that you want to own, that you want to acknowledge, that you want to really celebrate, take a moment. Well, I'll give you one more moment to make some notes on what it is. Also, think about areas in your life that maybe you don't normally celebrate. Like, I've been trained to, over the years, I've trained myself to celebrate around my business because I need that kind of enthusiasm and inspiration to keep going. But I don't as often celebrate around parenting pieces. Right? So think about the regular places, but then also think about some of the other areas in your life too. There's celebration in so many ways and in so many places. So, what is it for you? And then I see there's some shares already in the chat. I'm going to take a look at those in a moment. But before we get there, here's what I want to invite you to do. Whatever it is that you're celebrating, take a moment right now and bring it for yourself beyond the mental level of learning and processing. So we've activated the cognitive and the mental by me asking you the question and by you noting it, writing it down, making that mental connection. Now I want to invite you to bring it to your heart or bring it to your body or bring it to the spirit level. Spirit level can be just, being in gratitude to something bigger than you are. Heart level can be to feel the happiness or the excitement or the celebration of it in your heart. Body level can be just to bring that celebration fully into your body. So whatever, however you want to do it today, take a moment and bring the celebration beyond the cognitive into another level of learning and processing for you. I'll give you a moment. And notice how you feel as you bring it to another level. And take one more moment with that, really take it in. Give yourself the gift of actually receiving the good things that are happening. There's a difference between good things happening and receiving those good things. So I'd love to hear some of your celebrations. I'll read some from the chat, share more in the chat, and if anyone wants to raise their hand, we have time for a hand raiser too as well. Amy's sharing a week ago, my body decided to fast. So you've had a deeply spiritual week with many revelations. I'm so happy to hear it. Yes. Ayana's celebrating a big breakthrough this weekend and also making wonderful connection with new people and having some healing in some other relationships. Amazing. Yay. Alta, you've been going through some really difficult things and you're celebrating you unapologetically taking space for yourself. Yes, to cry, scream, be confused, and more. Big, big celebration. Jolly's celebrating holding a tight container on two pre-enrollment calls. Yes! One is engaging further and one has not come back to you yet. But you're not second guessing yourself. Huge, huge Jolly. So exciting. Randa celebrating, allowing herself to ask for her needs to be met over the weekend. So big. Connection with others. Time for yourself as a mama to recharge. Yes. AJ, you've got your hand up. Let's hear your celebration voice to voice.
I raised my hand for the embodiment of the celebration that I posted. So, really, the celebration of being me, AJ, as the soul of my business, came out of vision and coaching I did with Wendy last week, and then also my certification coaching that I started with Caitlin last week. And, another conversation with Michael, and like all of these supports, this is really what was brewing in me. I've been using third person and not really showing up as myself in my business because I am so many different friggin' people that don't always feel like they mesh. And just now, bringing that, like allowing that into my body level, I felt this flamenca energy come out. I haven't been dancing lately. I, kind of have tried to compartmentalize, like, yes, I am a brain and money person. And yes, I was a flamenco dancer. And yes, I am an overwhelmed mom. And I just felt this like rhythm come out and this projecting of soul.
Yes.
And energy that is how I, sort of what I'm celebrated for as a dancer and how I connect with audiences as a dancer.
Yeah.
It felt really good.
I love it. So first of all, just amazing celebration in terms of bringing you and your authentic self more fully to your business and that integration. So incredible. And all that you're sharing is just, I love it because it's piling on more evidence for activating more than one level of learning and processing for
Absolutely.
Ourselves and in our client work, right? So I love that you're just taking that space like that energy came through, right? And now that energy, you can come back to that as a body memory before you go to write your next sales, whatever, or your post, all of that. So big yes to all of that. And I'll just toss this your way if it resonates. As you were talking, I was thinking it could be really fun and valuable to choreograph a money doula flamenca dance that is just representational of this energy that you're bringing to your business.
The other thing I forgot I was going to say around this is, someone challenged me to offer to like lead a movement piece before some of our hour and a half sitting down meetings. And I thought like some of the other movement folks might be wanting to share a group movement, like, 5 or 10 minutes before we start this stuff. So it's something I'll bring up in the Facebook group and see if folks are interested.
I love it. I love how this cohort is connecting in so many different ways with all of your talents and just making community. It's amazing. Yes. And we'll stop it for here, but AJ, that's just also making me wonder if you're bringing movement into your client work as well and where your brilliance around movement and dance has a place in the money doula work possibly as well. So something to think about.
Thanks, Joanna.
Thank you. I'll read a couple more celebrations. Kelly's celebrating helping her 11-year-old launch his art business. That's awesome. Celebrating his confidence and putting himself out there. Yes, and you're applying sacred. So you can apply sacred depths to a lot of the parenting pieces for sure. Michaelin's having breakthroughs in several areas of your life and new possibilities. Yes. Simone is celebrating how you've been supporting your stepchildren through a variety of challenges. Yes. Runa is feeling 85% in alignment with your vision for the year. That's amazing. These are all Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So well done, everyone. I'm just reading through and I'm going to go back and read the rest of these, but just really, really amazing. And Annalise, yes, it is a celebration to connect with your pain for losses. That is a celebration of being with yourself in a world where we're not often encouraged to be with ourselves. And one of the responsibilities that we hold as coaches, for sure. All right, I'm so excited to go back and read through all of these. For now, one other question as we step into strategizing, just to like continue to pull everything along with us. Anything that anybody wants to share around what's really been resonating for you around either visioning or energetics of new things? And as a reminder, in our call last week on energetics of new things, we really looked at this kind of human behavior around new pieces, and that new things have a little bit of a different energy than already established things do, the difference of spring energy versus summer energy. And we looked at some of the blocks that can sometimes hold us back when we're stepping into new things. Lane.
I love so much this idea of the seasonality of ideas and projects. And I'm curious about helping clients really identify what season they're in, if there are ways to go a little bit deeper into that. Because I mean, I understand on the surface what each season is, but I wonder if there are other clues that we can tap into.
I don't often like to do this because like we're focusing on sacred depths, and I never say, oh, go do this other thing too. But in this one, and those of you know that you some of you have already started asking about advanced, and I'm like, focus on sacred depths, you know. But I will just say, because it's short and compartmentalized, in August, I'm offering a 2-day intensive called Sacred Rhythms, which is just all about coaching through the different seasons and how to apply, like specifically apply the seasonal work to the client work. And we're going to look at four different archetypes that's representative of the four seasons. So, the Fool, the Lover, the Sovereign, and the Destroyer. And we'll get to all of those nitty-gritties. So again, not salesy, but just something for everybody to think about. And I'll, you know what, now that we're talking about it, I'll put out like a little bit of a special rate for Sacred Rhythms for all of you. So that's something to think about. But for now, what I'd say is go back to our call last week. I spoke a lot. I actually gave a lot of information about spring, and see if you can start to make some of those connections, more, you know, deepen those connections, Lane, because I think there's a lot in there
Okay.
already for you. Yeah.
Thanks.
Anyone else wanna share anything about what's on your mind around visioning and energetics of new things? What have you been seeing or noticing? Michaelin.
I just wanted to share about surprises. And it's something that I've seen in client work, like whenever there's a big breakthrough, whenever there's like we're doing trauma work, like it doesn't even really matter what we're working on. But at some point in the process, there's always a surprise. There's always something that comes through the client had no idea. Like, oh my God, I didn't realize that's what was going on all this time. And I've been in that seat over this last, I don't know, while. I've just been in this like awesome blender of all of this stuff coming up. And I'm loving being the recipient of the surprises as opposed to the facilitator of them. And it just seems really important, even though we don't know it's there and we don't know it's coming until it's already here. I think there's some real magic in like articulating that and expecting it. And like, yeah, I've got surprises coming and I don't know what they're going to be, but they're so amazing. Mm-hmm. And just holding that space, I think is one of the most powerful things we can do.
I love that. I love that. And, the other thing that as you're talking, it's making me thinking is as practitioners, as facilitators, the moment that we get too attached to outcome for our clients or what they're working on or what they need to understand or whatever it is, then energetically we're actually cutting off the opportunities for those surprises to emerge. So a lot of it is also an energetics piece on our part as practitioners to not get too attached to outcome, to not be scared of surprises because they might take things off track or whatever it is, and to be curious and open and hold that curiosity. Energy follows energy. Hold that curiosity open for our clients to go there as well. Nice, thank you. Jolly.
Which kind of echoes Lane's question a little bit. One thing that I come up. Can you not hear me?
Yeah, now I can. Now it's better.
Okay. If it sometimes these AirPods are funny, so if it is, just tell me and I'll take them out and go on the computer, on the laptop. But in a lot of the work that I do, I often find that people are in this like liminal space, in this threshold where they are not who they were before, not yet who they are to become. But sometimes in that liminal space, there's a lot of exploration that has to go on, but it's almost not like a holding pattern, but kind of like a holding pattern, for lack of a better way of describing it. So if I liken that to the seasons, I'm just wondering, for example, if you have someone who's in spring or in summer, I kind of understand, you know, how to work with them on a visioning kind of level. But if you have someone who's in winter, you know, for me, it's kind of like, okay, you're winding something down in order to create space to bring something up. So would you say we're going to back off from the visioning for the moment because we're going to concentrate on the winding down? Would you say, let's just hold the space for you while you're in winter? Am I making sense? It's yeah. Kind of like, I'm just trying to understand how I might approach visioning if I can clearly if I am picking up that someone is in that winter space.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's such a good question. We looked at this a little bit last week. First thing to say is there's lots of different ways of being in winter, and there's different moments of winter. I'm gonna kind of say what I'm gonna say next for the sake of linearity, with the understanding that things are cyclical and kind of, you know, ever evolving. But I think of winter as like there's two phases of winter. The first phase of winter, let's say between winter solstice and Groundhog's Day, there are sparks, right? There's just like you see a spark here and you see a spark there, but you're not grabbing on to any sparks. You're just kind of letting some sparks fly. And that period, there's the sparks happening, maybe, but the even more overarching during that period is what needs to be let go, what needs to be rested and in silence, what emotions need to be met and made space for. That's kind of like the darkest of the winter, if you will. And then
so would we do a, sorry, Joanna, would we do a visioning around that?
Absolutely. So you can, and I'm glad you're asking this because I was thinking I didn't mention this last week. You can vision, how do you want this sabbatical time to look like? You know, whatever the sabbatical is. How, like, the, mm-hmm. maybe the goal right now is to really let go of that last relationship a little bit more and be with the grief and all that. Like, let you can vision that and then maybe create a little bit of a strategy around that, right? So absolutely you can vision out even that. It's like the vision before the vision, right? It's the inner vision before that outer, right? And then the second 6 weeks of 6-8 weeks of winter are, there's more light. We're getting closer and closer to spring. The days are getting longer. There might still be things to let go of, but there's less sparks and more like, oh, this is coming up. I might want to hold on to that. Oh, that's coming up. I might want to hold on. So we're still in the winter space. We're still releasing. We're still creating the space, but there's a little more to hold on to by way of outer vision. And again, I just said that linearly, but things, you know, like they are in flux. But is it helpful to kind of think about all of those pieces?
Yeah, I do remember now that you were talking about the light, and it was quite interesting because this mirrors what's going on in my astrology class now as well, where we're talking about how you have a decrease of light and then an increase of light. And so I absolutely love that you're tying that in. But I think for me, more than anything, it's that understanding that you can, visioning doesn't have to be just about the big stuff. You can vision, and not to say that like grieving isn't big, but visioning, I guess what I'm trying to say is it doesn't have to be something that's always like, oh, here's my dream.
Absolutely. No, it can be. So I have a client that's going through a winter phase right now, but she's been like holding on to all the work and all the programs and all. She's got an amazing business we've built over the years. And but she is in a winter and her business model needs to change. There's grieving that she's been doing. She just let go of a huge, long 10-year relationship. She's feeling a little stale around the work and the programming that she has been doing. And so we visioned out, you know, it might end up being more than 3 months that she needs, but we really like got to this place of like 3 months of letting go, of being in a liminal space of space. But we actually visioned out a little bit. I want her to have space and freedom and all of that, but we did vision out some of that 3 months for her so that she can really take that time and space for herself.
That makes so much sense, Anna. Appreciate it.
Good. Great question. Amy.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to say that I listened to Bruce Anderson's call, the bonus call on core gifts and core purpose, and I thought it was excellent. And if people haven't listened to it yet, I really recommend it. I think it's great for that to support the visioning.
I love that you're bringing that in with this. I recommend that call too. Bruce talks about core gifts. And there's just so many pearls of wisdom in that call. Thanks for bringing that in, Amy. Lara.
Hi. So my question is around, I'll tell you the context. So my husband and I sat down last week and we started visioning for our business and what we wanted to get out of our business for the next 12 months. And we came up with not one, but four visions, but I mean, they're all related. So I kind of wove them in all together, but I'm wondering, does that make sense or should we be looking at them separately? And I also wonder if maybe I'm confusing it with strategy versus visioning and whether maybe I just need to understand a little bit more the difference between the two.
So we'll look at strategy today, and you might have more of that answer by the time we're done. I mean, I would want to ultimately hear what the four pieces are and all of that. We don't have space for that right now, but I'm also happy, Lara, at another point or in the Facebook group to hear more. But what I'd say is if you are able to piece them together and that feels good and aligned, it sounds like you've created possibly a bigger vision. And then maybe there are milestones, and we'll talk about that today. Like, what's the first milestone? What's the next milestone, et cetera, to get to the bigger pieces that have come together. Does that land?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. So here's an old saying. I don't know where it comes from, but I really like it. A vision without a plan is just a dream. A plan without a vision is just drudgery. But a vision with a plan can change the world. So we're going to talk about planning today and strategizing. And let me ask, I'd love some shares from some of you. What is a strategy and why is it important? What is a strategy and why is it important? Who wants to share? Raise your hand. Brenda, thanks for popping that in the chat too. So what's strategy and why is it important? You all know the answer to this. Who wants to share? Jolly.
So for me, a strategy, I love playing chess. I'm not very good at it, but a strategy is kind of being able to look like 10 steps ahead, being able to kind of have, it's a combination of like macro and micro, and being able to say, you know, I have an understanding of the terrain, but in order to cross that terrain and not get overwhelmed, I'm going to break it down into little steps.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. I love that chess analogy. Nice. Who else? What's a strategy and why is it important? I'd love to hear one more voice on this. Lara.
Think about strategy as sort of the guardrail of your business or whatever your organization is. I used to do a lot of work in nonprofit, and so we'd have donors that would come in and say, hey, we'd really like you to do this. But we didn't have those guardrails and we didn't have that strategy of who we are and what we do and what makes us special, then we would kind of deviate and we go off the, you know, off the path.
I love that too. Yes, a strategy can help provide guardrails so that things don't get like bigger and less focused and all over the place. Nice. Vlada's saying in the chat, a strategy is the pathway to your dream. Yes. So as Vlada is saying, as Jolly said, and even in some ways, as Lara is sharing, I mean, in its simplest term, a strategy is a plan to get you from where you are now to what your vision is. When we create a vision, whether it's a big vision far out or even a vision that we want to accomplish in a month from now, there is a gap between where we are now and getting to that vision, achieving that vision. A strategy is the bridge, the plank by plank by plank, step by step by step by step, that we prepare to help get us from where we are now to where we want to be. A strategy is a way of describing how you're going to produce an outcome. It can also be helpful to think about strategies as supporting clients to become the leaders of their lives. Leadership is almost always easier with a plan. So after we've visioned, supported a client to create a vision, whether it's a big long-term vision or a shorter-term vision, at some point or another, we're also going to want to support them to create a strategy, to create that bridge between where they are now and where they'd like to be. Where in your life or work right now could you benefit from a strategy or an upgraded strategy? Where in your life or work right now could you benefit from a strategy or an upgraded strategy? And I'll just share one for me, like our strategy in our house. Yeah, exactly what I was about to say, Michael, and like in our household, our strategy with Panina, who is 13, around like what are her responsibilities and how are we moving her forward to being a little bit more of a responsible human being in the world, that strategy has like is out the window right now. That is a place where we could really use an upgraded strategy. So where in your life or work right now could it really benefit you from saying, you know, I'm here right now, I want to be here, and I could really use a bridge. Could you really use a way of bridging that gap? A plan. Randa saying business marketing, yes. Building an audience. Deciding on which aspects of my business to focus on, starting to actually coach instead of just learning. Yeah, good. Alta saying, what are my business values and why? And I love that, to think of that as a strategy in and of itself too. I mean, all of these. Okay, so, oh, AJ, do you have a question?
Yeah, I'm having a really hard time with strategy, and I'm wondering if you might share some other words or reframing that I could look at it as a more positive, attainable thing.
Yeah, what's the block for you?
I have so many ideas and no plans. I do a lot of things once in a row.
Why do you do a lot of things once in a row?
I'm working on that. I don't know, but that's a pattern in my life. Maybe I forget how or why I did it the first time, or maybe I didn't get the satisfaction for how it went, or maybe it was just not my thing.
Yeah.
But strategy, if I think about it like that, is like too many steps. It's too many steps. And I have a lot of trouble with executive function in that way.
Yeah, so it sounds, tell me if I'm getting this right. It sounds like there's a couple of pieces going on for you. I think one is the just executive functioning. We're all neurodiverse, in our own ways. And it sounds like lots of little steps is not what your brain needs in order to accomplish a goal. That's one piece I'm hearing. Another piece I'm hearing is that sometimes if things maybe don't work out the first time, you don't feel satisfied, maybe you get disconnected from the wild. Sometimes they're just not aligned, but it's like I gave it a try, but I'm stopping myself from kind of taking the next step or giving it the next try. Am I hearing that right?
Yes. And I mean, also, it is sometimes getting in my way and reinventing the wheel.
Yeah. So if we take the first piece, I think maybe let's start there for now. And if we know for you what a strategy is not, is lots of little pieces, what is helpful for you in terms of strategy and in terms of how you think about strategy?
Like, I need a different word for it.
Yeah, so let's create a whole other different word, and we don't have to nail it right now, but give us some phrases that come to mind. What helps you get from where you are now to where you want to be?
A partner with a A deadline.
Is that helpful? Deadline? For some people it is, for some people it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Short-term deadlines.
Yeah. So for you, maybe it's not strategizing. Maybe it's about creating a plan that you feel like you can be, that you can really partner with, and that plan can really be a partner with you, where there are short-term deadlines in it. How does that land?
I can try that on.
Does it? I'm having trouble reading your face and energy around it.
I don't see myself and my plan as very compatible.
Yeah.
It's too much myself, maybe, to where I'm not going to hold inner accountability.
So I'm wondering if there are some bigger pieces here that's it might be around the language, AJ, but it might be around your like how you show up for it. What are ways, and we're talking abstract here. I think it's going to be different for each vision and goal, but if you think about a current goal that you have or a current vision that you have, how do you want to show up to execute the vision?
I want to show up with truth and honesty of who I am.
Yeah. So what if it was a truth and honesty plan for achieving your goal?
I love that.
Yeah. So for you, it's not a strategy. For you, it's a truth and honesty plan.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Barbara.
I just wanted to piggyback on what AJ was talking about with the neurodiversity. You know, I kind of like, not everybody is neurodiverse, and that was kind of, and I feel like I'm more neurodiverse, but I'm not like diagnosed. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that even when we know our brain doesn't work the same as others, doesn't mean we have the same capacity to affect the change. And I really felt great about how you took her through that, Joanna. So I just kind of wanted to kind of share that the hill that we're climbing could be very different, in that when you're not in those shoes, it's hard to see what that hill is, or can be hard to see what that hill is. So so I just kind of want to share that. I really resonated with a lot of what AJ was saying, and I just kind of want to bring awareness to the group that the coachability for somebody who's neurodiverse is not, it's not absent, we're still coachable, but it just is I'm learning about it for myself. So I just think that if it's not something you have awareness on, it might be really puzzling to you how you can't help somebody, you know, as a coach who's neurodiverse, get to that next place. So for example, like something that I learned recently about it, like you can have a lot of knowledge, but that implementation, that executive function, there's often a pretty big gap for those of us who struggle with ADD, ADHD, between those two places. So I have a wealth of knowledge, but that ability to apply it is not as strong for me internally. And so I need to create external support, which is why I was like, hey, who wants to do a co-working call? Because and I'm just figuring this out now, and I'm like 64.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to speak to that.
I'm so glad you're speaking to it. So a couple of pieces. First of all, as I was saying the words neurodiverse when I was talking with AJ, I was like, that didn't come out the right way. So thank you for just calling that out. Those were not the right words. And I didn't mean to say that we're all having the same experience, if that came off that way. My apologies. And then from there, yes, it's, you know, we, and I don't think we need to be experts. I mean, it's always great to, you know, have more and more information. I'm an information seeker and always looking for more, but I don't want anybody to get scared of like, oh, if I haven't walked in those shoes, because this is filters, right? It's just it's another kind of filter that we have to check. Having some extra information is great, but, and always coaching the what based on the who, number one, which always checking filter number one, always coaching the what based on the who, never expecting a particular answer or outcome. For example, when I was just working with AJ, if I would have been expecting a particular, oh, we're just gonna like get to the, or whatever it is, you know, I wouldn't have been able to continue to ask her questions and hold that space. So all of those pieces, I think, can help us so much, including all the other energetics pieces that we've been learning. I am whole and complete. You are whole and complete. I practitioner don't need to fix this. I'm not, you know, I'm here to hold this space for you to discover your own answers and what works best for you. So I think we can apply all of those pieces too.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that where you were reading AJ, it's like, I'm not reading like that. That was so spot on, because it's like if the suggestion doesn't resonate, you know, you saw it, right? So I think you know, I'm bringing this up specifically around strategy. This, I think, for me, and I don't, you know, I'm not going to apply it to everybody else, but for me, this is a really big stumbling block. This is like, please hold my hand in this other one too. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm so glad you're bringing it into the conversation. And that actually is a beautiful segue into what I wanted to share next about strategy, which is that, and Angela's already just getting there too in the chat, because it was exactly where I wanted to go next, which is that strategizing can run the gamut of, we can call it pure coaching. So just asking questions for the client to find their own answers, to a combination of that more like pure coaching with consulting. You know, we each have expertise or experience in certain topics, and absolutely, we can bring that into strategizing. But that being said, a place where a lot of practitioners, I don't want to say make a mistake, but don't serve their clients as fully as they could, is when you go to strategize and you default into the expertise and into the, like, here are the four steps in order to achieve that goal that you client want. That may have worked for you, practitioner, before. That may have worked for so many of your clients before, or people that you've seen. But don't assume that those are the action steps in those orders that the person that you are sitting with, that the person in front of you, that that's going to be the best strategy for them. The moment that you go cookie cutter into anything, including strategy, is the moment that you have stopped coaching the what based on the who, is the moment that you have stopped really listening to the human being in front of you, is the moment that you have started to a little bit cut off, for lack of a better way of saying this, their inner wisdom around what is going to be best for them. So I have, for example, I have a lot of experience and expertise and wisdom on marketing. When I support my clients on a marketing strategy, I never think of that wisdom or expertise as the way or the only way or the thing that my client is going to end up doing. I think of it as possible thoughts, ideas, maybe some guiding lights or things that I'm going to toss if need be, and then curious to see where my client is going to go with that and what's going to be right for them. Does that make sense? Okay. So let's talk about a couple more pieces that can be really helpful when we support a client with a strategy. The first is that new things, new strategy, often require a strong foundation. They often require a strong foundation. So What I mean by this is a plan is only as good. One of the things it's only as good as is that if there is an environment to support that plan. A plan is only as good as the environment that is set, the foundation that is set to support that plan. So, for example, if I'm working with a client who wants to achieve something big in their business and they have a full-time job and two young children, one of the foundational pieces, you know, there are X amount of steps to reach that goal, but one of the foundational pieces there is how much time does this client have available? How can we set the foundation to create some more time? Is there a support from the outside that can come in, or childcare, or boundaries that can be set with their 9-to-5 job, et cetera, right? So that's a foundational piece. And then based on the foundation that we set around time, some of the strategy is gonna follow from there, because if that client ends up having 5 hours a week to work on the business, the strategy towards the goal is gonna look different than if that client has 20 hours a week to work on the business, right? So that's one example of setting a foundation for a strategy. Here's another example. And, you know, let's not get like too much in boxes. Some of the foundation is also part of the strategy, you know, et cetera. So, you know, be flexible here with me with language too. But just to give another example, let's say you're working with a client, their vision is they want to be in a loving, romantic relationship. So maybe there's a strategy of creating an online dating profile, and maybe there's a strategy of going to, you know, different local community groups, or, you know, whatever it is. But is there a foundation that's gonna really support those strategy pieces, right? So for example, again, there might be the time issue. Is there time to date and do these things? There might be a strong foundation of self-love that wants to be worked on, because that foundation of self-love is gonna support those outer pieces. Maybe there's a foundation around moving into healthier boundaries and boundary setting in relationships. Again, that can be a strategy piece, like one of the planks on that bridge to ultimately get to the goal. But I also like to think of it, I think it helps, it can help when strategizing kind of get to like, these are the pieces to work on too, to set that foundation for the best outer actions and the best outcomes on the outer actions. AJ saying a plan without a foundation is just an idea. Yeah, I like that. All right, let me pause on this. Any other thoughts or anything else coming together, or any other examples that you want to share around setting a foundation? No? Okay, good. There are some elements. I don't hit all of these all the time with a strategy, but there are some elements that I like to think of that help comprise an effective strategy. Again, we're always coaching the what based on the who, so these are suggestions, not rules. But here are some elements of a good strategy. Number one, having a clear goal. So remember, there can be differences between goals and visions. We looked at this a couple weeks back. You know, maybe your vision for yourself is to be a yoga master, like having, you know, like mastery of yoga, or to be a yoga teacher, you know, whatever it is. That's a little bit of a longer goal, a longer vision. And then maybe the first goal in that longer vision is to master a handstand. So the goal is more tangible, more attainable, less overwhelming, and kind of that clear. There's still a strategy, right? There's still steps that are gonna go into mastering that handstand that you'll strategize out. But having that goal versus creating a strategy for the full vision is oftentimes what's most helpful for clients. Angela's asking in the chat, do you work on personal blocks as foundations for a plan? So Angela, yes, I do. I take all of that into consideration, and sometimes those blocks have to be worked on first before the action steps are taken. Oftentimes it can be in tandem, but I do think about those personal pieces as part of that foundation. Okay, so having a clear goal. As AJ was saying earlier, now for some people this isn't helpful, but for a lot of people it is, having a due date for that goal. Or a deadline for that goal. I want to achieve the goal by X date. For some people that puts, they may not be ready. It puts a lot of pressure on them, or it can block. So always coach the what based on the who. But for many other people, saying, you know, by September 1st, I want to have X, whatever that goal is, can be really helpful. Another element that can oftentimes be really helpful in a strategy is supporting a client to identify either a guiding feeling or a guiding belief for the strategy. Either a guiding feeling or a guiding belief. So when we don't have a guiding feeling for a strategy or executing a strategy, we often default to doing it, it's going to feel stressful, having a tight jaw, it's not fun, just have to get it done, gripping. Let me know if you know what I'm talking about. I see this like all the time in my business. If I skip over, you know, how do I want to feel as I take these action steps? Like that's just one of my defaults. Supporting a client from the get-go, even before you, if you're gonna name steps, to say, how do you wanna feel as you take steps towards this? What is the guiding feeling, or what is the belief that you wanna be believing consistently throughout? It can help so much. And action steps oftentimes can flow. Aligned action steps can often flow from the guiding feeling or the guiding belief. It's almost like moving into the energy and then brainstorming on what those action steps are from that energy. Sometimes it can be really useful to ask a client, what does your inner wisdom want you to know about this plan that we're about to create, or about this strategy that we're about to create? So connecting in right away to that spirit level, right, the inner wisdom, it can, again, more brains aligned brainstorming on the steps can oftentimes flow from that. And yes, Amy, I'm so glad you're saying that. I meant to say it. Yes, the feeling of having accomplished a goal can inform the feeling that we want to have during the process, but it may not necessarily be the same thing. Next element. Now, again, always coach the what based on the who. This is something that might not work, like for AJ, possibly, although with the new languaging we have around the truth, I think, was it truth and honesty, whatever, what it was, you know, this might be important. Baby steps. So for some folks, breaking things down into smaller steps can be too overwhelming and too fiddly and too detailed. So we want to work with the client on what is the right bite-sized step for them. Like if we were going to go to, you know, that example that I gave, like master a handstand, how big of a steps are we looking at? It's almost like before you sit to eat a meal, almost to determine how big the bites of the meal are gonna be, right? Like what's right for you. For some clients, it might be they need 30-minute steps. For some clients, they might need 15-minute steps, right? Like I just need to know, like, what is the next 15 minutes and the next 15 minutes and the next 15 minutes? For some people, it's going to be 30. For some people, it's going to be a little broader, right? Like 2 hours or whatever it is. For me personally, I like to have things between 30 and 60 minutes. That's a good bite for business. That's a good bite size for me, where I feel like I can focus for that amount of time, and I can like achieve a step by the end of it. This next piece is a little bit about foundation, but I'll just share it. It might help you think of, you know, get in there in a different way or think of things a little differently. Sometimes with a strategy, I also like to think of not just what are each of the different steps that we're taking, but are there daily or weekly habits that are going to be helpful? Are there daily or weekly habits that are going to be helpful to be able to set up the environment with which to take the action or strategy? So, for example, for me personally, without a doubt, in order for the things that end up in my strategy are things that I'm not going to normally do every day in my business. They're the kind of the projects that are important to move forward. So a daily habit for me is taking care of administrative emails that I know I would do anyway, finishing them by a certain amount of time, turning off the email so that I can focus on the marketing or the curriculum or, you know, whatever the project is. That for me is a really important habit, or else I'll just check the emails as they come in or wonder like, oh, there was this admin thing that I was gonna do, and then it takes me away from the action step. And then another element is working in markers or celebrations. Working in markers of progress or celebrations. We need as humans, like, you know, capitalism has trained us to be machines, do this thing and then do this thing and this thing and this thing, right? Like, just keep on doing the things. But if we don't pause and mark like celebrate, like, oh, I just got that done. I just got the first draft of my first newsletter done. It's not complete yet, but yay. Like, I just do that. I'm gonna take myself out for an ice cream because I just, you know, did a little research on the different dating apps out there. Like, I deserve, right? Like, or whatever. Just like, I'm in a different place than I was before this action step or before these three action steps. So marking and celebrating, so important. Lisa's saying in the chat, it feels like we're eliciting the feelings we want to have during the journey towards the destination. Exactly. Who we are being along the way to our goal is just as important as the destination and the goal. So beautifully said, Lisa. That's it. Exactly. So sometimes in some programs, similar to what y'all are gonna, you know, some of you are doing on your own in this group, the co-working sessions, in some programs that I lead, we have get it done sessions where we'll have 90 minutes or sometimes longer of everybody comes in, this is what I want to accomplish in the 90 minutes. But before we go, when I hold those get it done sessions, before we go to get things done, first of all, I chunk it into 30 minutes. We check in, right? That's kind of the bite size that I've decided for the group. But before we go into to what's gonna get done, I will always at the beginning say to everybody, how do you wanna feel for the next 30 minutes as you take your first action step? And I usually have people actually bring a candle and set that intention by lighting the candle on how they want to feel. Because it is about accomplishing the step, but our time is our lives. It's about how we feel, and that helps us accomplish. All right, there are a couple other pieces I want to make sure we cover today, but anything around these elements that I just mentioned that anybody has a question on or anybody wants to add to? No? Okay. Oftentimes, for strategy, one of the things that I keep on coming back to that I kind of like I hold as a concept when I'm supporting a client to strategize, and I forget to hold it for myself sometimes when I strategize for myself, which I need to, is simplification. What is not just what are the steps here, but what's the easiest way here? What is the simplest way to get to this goal? We can have a tendency of thinking that more is more when oftentimes less is more, and adding extra pieces or things we need to do or, you know, all the things. So I always like to think, what's the easiest way? What's the simplest way? Yeah, Amy's saying, what's the most efficient way? Okay, this next piece is important. And this, in some ways, also is related to what Barbara was sharing before. Not in terms of neurodiversity, but again, just like being in knowing that we're not in another person's shoes. When we co-create a strategy with a client, we want to take their natural rhythm into consideration. We want to take their natural rhythm into consideration. This is something that practitioners don't check their filters on enough. And then they go to create a strategy with a client that's based on the practitioner's natural rhythm versus the client's natural rhythm. And this is a recipe for frustration and heartache and all the things. So everybody's got their own natural rhythm. And we might have different rhythms, different moments in our lives too, right? It's not a monolithic thing. And also we might have a different natural rhythm in one area of our life versus another area of our life, right? So not monolithic in any way. So there's lots of different ones. I wanna name some of the, I don't know, most common or like general categories of natural rhythms so that you have this information and then, you know, you can adapt with clients as you work with them. So one type of natural rhythm is, we can call it a consistent doer or a marathoner. So a consistent doer or a marathoner, the way they ideally move and flow through and get things done is they do a little bit consistently. Kind of like when someone runs a marathon, usually the strategy is not to like just run as fast as you can to get to the end, but you're doing a little bit of a slower pace with chunks at a time, right? So this kind of person, they might need to consistently every week, 5 hours, 5 hours, five, or every day, right? They're consistent doers. It's like a little bit each day or a little bit each week. They're running the marathon. Other folks, their natural rhythm are sprinters. Sprinters, where their energy is they're gonna like go, 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 and then they need a longer break. Go, 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 and then they need a longer break, right? So a sprinter strategy would look like a lot of activity in a shorter period of time, and then longer time for not doing as much and taking a break. Here's another kind of natural rhythm. I call them tipping pointers. Tipping pointers are the kind of folks who are not ready to take their first outer action step right away. Tipping pointers is like, They need first a week or two to like sink into things and to marinate on things and kind of orient, like get ready to take the action and orient themselves to it and let it seep in. And then there's a tipping point and they're usually then ready to be a marathoner or a sprinter after that. But it's like, I know for those clients, we've learned that like first they just, we're not, the next action step isn't going to be in the next week or two. Like they're just going to first take their time to settle in. And then another type of natural rhythm, and again, I'm not being exhaustive here, I'm just kind of giving different thoughts and ideas to stir the cauldron for you, folks that I call deep thinkers and processors. These folks are often similar to marathoners, except they're even slower. They're deep thinkers. They need their time for each action step. When we are not aware of our clients' natural rhythms and then strategize just through our own filters, we're basically creating a shame machine out of the strategy, because it's like trying to fit that individual into taking actions that they don't normally, that aren't most aligned for them or optimal for them. I cannot tell you how valuable it has been for certain clients of mine to finally see for example, that they're a tipping pointer, and to be totally validated and normalized in that for themselves, versus trying to fit themselves in to a shape that isn't for them their whole lives. Yeah, Melissa's a tipping pointer. You've been outed. Okay, so what's your natural rhythm? Take a moment and note for yourself. And again, it might be different in different times in your life or different areas of your life. You know, so pick one place maybe to focus on currently. What is your actual natural rhythm, regardless of whatever strategy you've been creating for yourself? Amy is a marathoner. Cecil is a tipping pointer and deep thinker processor. Yeah. And it can be not, it can be something else outside of the four, or like Cecil, a combination. Sophie is a marathoner, slow and steady wins the race. Barbara is a sprinter. Yep. Alta is a deep thinker. Kelly's a marathoner. Vlad is a sprinter for the most part. Whatever your natural rhythm is, how have you maybe gotten into a little trouble or stuck or whatever you want to call it by not knowing or honoring your rhythm? How have you maybe, how have things gotten a little tough in the past by not knowing or honoring your rhythm? Lena is saying, I grew up being told you are too slow, and you're realizing that you're a deep thinker. Yeah, and that frees you from the narrative. I'm so happy. Alta's crashed by going too fast. Jackie's gotten stuck in the shame machine. Full on meltdown. Yep. Producing work that feels off because of rushing, chronically ill, self-doubt. Yeah, good. So let's pause here for a moment. Anything I'd love to hear a share or two? What's feeling important? What are you seeing in this natural rhythm piece? And Ayana's asking, Ayana, you want to come on for a moment? Sorry, Michael, and you were going to share, and then Ayana. Michael, and were you going to share?
Oh, was I? I can.
Oh, I thought you took yourself off mute because you were going to share.
I did. So I just realized I did take myself off mute. I want to explain what a carrot eater is. I'm like, and I have a little bit of embarrassment saying this, but I'm like the donkey that's following the carrot, you know, that's hanging on the stick out in front. And as long as the carrot's out there, I'm like, I'm so into the carrot. But as when the carrot loses appeal or gets stale, then I'm on to the new carrot. And it's not always this flighty, shiny object thing. There's actually like a rhythm and a prioritization and a whole passion piece that gets activated for me when I'm following the carrot. And I might have multiple carrots, and that's a great place to be.
Yeah, I love that. And so it could be helpful for you in this, you know, going back to daily practices or weekly practices, that could be a practice for you to ask yourself, what's the carrot? And to be clear on that for yourself, and has the carrot changed? And to, on a daily or weekly basis, to just come back to that for you, because you know that that's really supportive in your strategy and execution. Good. Ayana.
Hey, I have to also say that my body is having massive symptoms today.
Yeah, I realized after I said come on that I should have asked if you even want to. Is now a good moment?
I think not, because I don't think I'm going to be able to respond well. But I was curious if there was questions to ask ourselves. to
Yeah, so
comp.
I think to go back, his one thing you can do is to go back historically. Well, so natural rhythm, as I said, like it changes over time. And so where you're at right now, where your natural rhythm is at right now might be different than it was, 10 years ago, and might be different than it's going to be in a month from now too. And so what I'd say is, today you're having, a lot of symptoms. It may not be the best day, or maybe it is the exact right day to do it. But take a moment and say, like, what is the rhythm that my body wants to move at right now in this moment in my life? And kind of sense into that. You can look a little bit historically too. Have you done better when it's been a lot in a row, and then breaks, or little pieces, or taking your time, or something else? But I'd say, don't, kind of play with it and be curious with it.
That sounds good. I think there's a feeling of block, and curious about that block. I suppose it's I think I've always had an idea that I'm supposed to be different than I am, and like most of us do. And yeah, there's something in there for me to definitely look at. Thank you,
Good.
dear.
Yeah, thank you. Vlada.
Hi. So,
Can't hear you.
really?
Now I can. Yeah.
Okay. Great question about our own rhythm. I realize that I stay in the tipping point prep phase for a long time, but I'm considering more than one things at that time. The current when the time starts to sprint, I'm like, oh, I need to sprint on all of these things at the same time. It becomes a superhuman effort.
Yeah. So
So,
that's back to some of the prioritization things that we've spoken about before. And maybe that you want to take that into account in your strategizing and say, these are four things I want to do. What order do I want to do them in? So it's not that I'm not going to do, it's not that I'm only going to do the first thing. I'm going to get to do all of them. But what's the order that I want to do them in? Or if you are ambitious and you can, maybe it's what are the first two and what are the second two, right? If you need that. But I want to invite you to pattern break, Vlada. Okay, and pattern break sometimes takes effort and it takes discomfort. You know how you've been doing it. Keep the ways that it's worked, right? Don't get rid of, but break, even if it's uncomfortable. See if you can poke some holes in that pattern for yourself. Okay? Good. Annalise.
It's an interesting one because, as you said, our preference change, and sometimes, we don't recognize ourselves. Like for me, it's very different when I was a lawyer compared to now that I'm self-employed. And what I found is that I can be quite consistent if I have a regular rhythm, but with the business is a lot up and down. So I struggle to focus when I don't have a deadline towards third party, but it's just with me. Like, like I have to study or I have to do business development. At that point, my rhythm changes. Whereas if I have some sort of like commitment, I am a marathoner and I run also quite fast,
So what I would say is try this for yourself, even if it's a commitment just to you. Employ all of the things we've been talking about. Give it a serious deadline, right? We said that was one of the elements. And then create a marathon strategy for it, right? If it's every day you're working towards that goal, create that strategy and that blueprint where you know you have something to do every day to get to that goal. If that goal is a little bit too big and too far out, do the first marker to it and create that marathon strategy for yourself. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good. Carmen.
Hello. So this is my share is on the teaching. And what I'm noticing right now is some stories are starting to come up for me and like a little bit of fear, if you will, around some of this, because this is all some of the stuff I already do. This is all such really juicy information that I can see how it can help tremendously support the client moving towards what they want to move to. And I also noticed that it will take some time in like getting to know the client, right? And like even helping the client get to know themselves in order to like share the stuff with you, because a lot of people come in and they feel stuck and disconnected from themselves. So my fear around some of this is that, you know, in the beginning, as I'm getting to know the client or helping the client connect with me, so on and so forth, that maybe I won't recognize their rhythms right away or recognize how they need to work or whatever the case is. And that maybe, you know, I'm doing some sort of harm by giving them things that won't work for them or moving them in a direction that maybe I haven't checked my own filter on and things like that. And then having them go in 1 or 2 months down the program and it was probably not in the best way that they needed for themselves, but I haven't realized that yet. And then maybe them feeling like they don't want to do it anymore and just like having to redirect that. So all of these things are coming up for me right now. Like, oh man, have I been doing this? Have I been steering them in the wrong way? How do I stop this? How do I like get out of my own way and not beat up on myself about it? Like all of that.
Yeah. Yes. I love this whole question. So first of all, you haven't been doing it the wrong way, right? That is not good, productive thinking. Like you've been doing it exactly as you've meant to do it until this moment, and you might shift it a little bit. So then from there, a couple things. So you always want to ask in the beginning, you know, what is your natural rhythm or how, right? And a client might know right away, or they might be like, I don't know, nobody's ever bothered to ask me that. I just thought I had to, you know, like, do, right? And you might, through some questions, come to real clarity in that moment, or it might still be a little bit in the mystery. Mm-hmm. One of those is not better than the other, so long as you're checking and tracking, right? So if there isn't full clarity, you can say, okay, you know, we're not totally clear yet, totally normal to not know until we try. Based on what you're sharing, here's my sense, or based on what you're sharing, what's your sense? Ask the client of how you want your pacing to be. And then come up together with when you're gonna check in on that. So it might be, so take these three actions. They think they're a sprinter. Okay, do all this week, and then let's check in next week and see if that worked for you. Mm-hmm. Or marathoner, let's check in a week, or let's check in 2 weeks, and then take how that worked or didn't work, and then readjust from there. Mm-hmm. So long as you're transparent about the process, right, as you are open and curious, as you're normalizing, you know, or like tweaking here, tweaking there, this is part of the process. Yeah. Energy follows energy, your client will go with that. Is that
helpful? What I'm hearing is that the biggest piece is being completely honest and transparent about, we're kind of like trial and erroring this whole situation, and we're going to keep connecting about it and keep connecting about it and find what works best for their rhythm.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's that keep on connecting and keep on seeing, like, that is a beautiful, tight, loving coaching container right there. Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. Tina.
Hi, Joanna. I identify with actually three of those rhythms.
Oh, Tina.
And so when I was thinking about the tipping pointer and the marathoner and what was that last thing?
The deep processor.
I'm on vacation and I might be in a spot somewhere. Yeah, the deep processor. Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay, good. So when I was thinking about that, I saw myself like past and present in those modes, understanding that there's probably even a fear beneath the tipping pointer and the deep processor. Maybe, you know, because there's that analytical ability, which is great. You know, they like to see the big picture, you know, very insightful. But underneath that, could that also be overly cautious? Because I could see that in myself. And I'm wondering if following someone's rhythm is also a way to identify fears that they could come up against.
So it could. I mean, definitely you want to create a distinction between natural energy versus fear that is shifting an energy. For a true deep processor, if that's truly their natural rhythm, there's not fear in it. It's really just how they process information and then come to prepare themselves to take action, versus someone that's holding themselves back and stalling. And maybe masquerading as a deep thinker. And so, you know, you want to kind of use questioning skills. You want to be tracking and listening. You want to be creating awareness. At some point, you might do a befriend your fear. And the way that you will ultimately know is if that natural rhythm supports the client, then that's their natural rhythm. Mm-hmm. If that natural rhythm holds the client back, then that's not their natural rhythm. Now, it might look for a deep processor like they're being held back just because of society's messaging on like how quickly we need to do things and take action and, you know, what's right versus wrong. And so there might be normalizing that comes with that. Even deep processors, it's not like something that takes someone else a month is going to take the deep processor a year. It's not, mm-hmm. it's not about that, but it's more that they almost like click into a tipping pointer and then it might be like a marathon versus a sprint. But if it's just not taking any action, that's an obstacle. That's not a natural rhythm.
Okay. I got that. Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, and AJ, hopefully that also speaks to what you're sharing in the chat too. Yeah, and there is a question about resistance versus style. Okay, I know we're past time, so thank you for those of you that have hung on. Your partner homework is, now that you've done visioning with your coaching partner, spend the next session co-creating a strategy and employing the different pieces that we looked at today. I'd love if you have a moment just before you run off to whatever you're doing next for you to make note for yourself on what you're taking away from our time together today. And if you're in the Facebook group, I'd love for you to share it and see what is it that you're taking away. I'll hang on for a couple minutes if anybody needs anything, but if not, we are officially done, and enjoy the rest of your day.